You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM. I have Carl Small from Montreal Hunger Strike Support Committee here. But first, a clip from the picket this past Friday in front of the U.S. Consulate in support of the California prisoners on indefinite hunger strike.
From Abu Ghraib to Pelican Bay, there's blood on the hands of the USA.
We support those who fight in the Pelican Bay hunger strike.
Hey, hey!
Ho, ho!
The prison system has to go.
We support those who fight in the Pelican Bay hunger strike.
Hi, can you introduce yourself?
My name's Carl Small, and I'm a member of the Montreal Hunger Strike Support Committee, and I've been involved in prison issues for a number of years.
So what are the conditions like in Pelican Bay?
Well, Pelican Bay was built in 1989, and it was built as what's called a supermax. And a supermax is essentially one of the most restrictive prison environments, and it's essentially an environment that's meant to break people's will. One could even say that's meant to torture people without necessarily breaking the international laws on torture. Prisoners spend essentially their entire lives in their cells, which are roughly the size of a walk-in closet. That cell includes their bunk, includes a toilet, and they're allowed out for a maximum of an hour a day. During that hour, they're brought to what is euphemistically called the exercise yard. This is essentially a larger cell with a very small hole in the roof. There's nobody else in the exercise yard at the same time as you're brought there, and there's certainly no exercise equipment, and after your hour, you're brought back to your cell. And for the past year at least, prisoners have not been brought to the exercise yard even once a day. Besides that, there's atrocious medical care, worse even than in most other prisons. There is food, which comes in the form of two meals a day, which are individually delivered through the slot of a cell so that you never see anybody else, and food can be used as a weapon, meaning when the guards are unhappy with some of the prisoners, everyone in that section might be, you know, denied a meal or might have their food tampered with.
And what are the prisoners' demands?
The prisoners' demands relate directly to the conditions in the SHU. The SHU is the security housing unit at Pelican Bay. And reading out the demands, you'll get an idea of just how, you know, how atrocious the system of supermaxes is. For one, the first demand is to eliminate group punishments. What a group punishment means is that essentially, if at present a prisoner does something that annoys the guards will punish all of the prisoners in that group. And how they define that group is they might define it racially. So for instance, if a black prisoner did something that annoyed the guards, all of the black prisoners in a particular wing might be punished. Or they might define it by gang. So if they assume that a prisoner is a part of a particular gang, they'll punish everyone who's supposed to be in that gang. Or they'll just punish everyone on the tier. The second is to abolish what's called the debriefing policy and what's called the gang validation criteria. And this is really atrocious, which is the way in which you end up in the SHU, the way in which you end up in the security housing unit, is if you're fingered as being a member of a gang. And none of the people who are fingered as being members of a gang get something like a trial where they get to defend themselves. Basically, it's because another prisoner has said that you're a gang member, or because the guards have said that you're a gang member, and then you're sent to the security housing unit, and you're not allowed out until you agree to debrief, which essentially means you agree to meet with the gang investigation unit and tell them who other gang members might be. And if you're not a gang member, this poses a certain problem, because you might not know who other gang members are. So it creates a real incentive for false accusations. And those who refuse to snitch, those who refuse to debrief, simply stay in the security housing unit. And we have people who have spent over 20 years at present in the security housing unit, living alone in their cells and never seeing another human being except the guards. The third demand is very simple. It's that the prison comply with the recommendations of a government commission, the U.S. Commission on Safety and Abuse in Prisons, which in 2006 called for an end to long-term solitary confinement, and which also said that any kind of solitary confinement shouldn't be used as a first resort, but only ever as a last resort. This is in reaction to a situation in the United States where close to 100,000 people live in solitary confinement at the moment in U.S. prisons, and over 1,000 of them in the Pelican Bay SHU. The fourth demand is to provide adequate food and to stop using food as a weapon. And the fifth demand is to expand and provide constructive programs and privileges for indefinite SHU prisoners. And just to explain what this can mean, because it's really pathetic, it's things like having a right for one phone call a week, or having the right to receive one photo from a loved one every year, or having the right to buy, to purchase vitamins, or warm clothing in winter, or things like that. Things that are standard even in other supermaxes in the United States, but which are denied in the Pelican Bay SHU.
And how is the strike going so far? How many are on hunger strike? And how many prisons in California have now started going on hunger strike?
Well, initially, the prisoners in the SHU have been organizing this for over a year. We don't know exactly how, and we may never know exactly how. And initially, when they made it public, they said that it would be several dozen people would be going on indefinite hunger strike. It started on July 1st, and over that weekend, the July 1st weekend, CDCR, which is the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, said that less than two dozen prisoners were on hunger strike. A few days later, CDCR essentially came forward and admitted that they had been saying something untrue, and that in fact over 6,000 prisoners, not only in Pelican Bay but throughout California, in as many as 13 prisons, had gone on hunger strike. Now it's important to mention, this doesn't mean that over 6,000 people were going on indefinite hunger strike and were prepared to die. What this does mean is that those in Pelican Bay asked people to go on hunger strike throughout the system as a show of solidarity. And so these thousands of people, many of whom, most of whom even, are not in supermaxes, so most of whom, you know, aren't suffering this incredible isolation, but nevertheless they went on hunger strike as a show of solidarity towards the people at Pelican Bay. From what we understand in Pelican Bay, the entire D unit, which is the unit with these most restrictive conditions, is almost 100% on hunger strike. The only prisoners not on hunger strike in D unit are those who are told not to go on hunger strike because they're elderly or they have serious health conditions. We also know that in general population, where there weren't necessarily high hopes of many people going on hunger strike, because general population includes, amongst others, those who've agreed to snitch. You know, it's a mixed bag. We heard that in general population, it's almost 100% on hunger strike. Even amongst those who are housed close to the clinic, who have serious health problems, some are on hunger strike. I'm personally in contact with a man by the name of Chad Landrum, who has end-stage liver disease and severe diabetes, and he's gone on indefinite hunger strike. And just to be clear, indefinite hunger strike means that they are willing to die if their demands are not met. And Landrum, you know, in his medical condition, he'll likely be one of the first to die, but he wrote in a letter that he sent out just before the hunger strike began that he's willing to die, that, you know, the term he used was victory or death. And it's because I know I've been corresponding with him for the past year. The isolation conditions amount to a slow death. So it's not a difference between, well, maybe we die on hunger strike or maybe we can live life in these conditions. These conditions are designed to destroy people. And they succeed in destroying people. And so the hunger strike, at the same time that it's people putting their lives on the line, it's people also fighting for their lives.
And how has the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation reacted to the demands? And do you think negotiations will begin soon?
Well, I certainly hope negotiations will begin soon, but it's difficult to say. How the CDCR reacted, as I said, the first weekend, although they knew that over 6,000 were on hunger strike, they said that less than two dozen were. When they announced that 6,000 were, it was only so that they could follow it up by saying, oh, but now it's, you know, half that many are on hunger strike. As I said, that was kind of, you know, to me it wasn't a surprise, but it was their way of putting out the big number to try and say, look, it's petering out. We know that in some prisons, guards have gone throughout the prison telling prisoners that the demands have been met and that the hunger strike is over. And in some prisons, that's worked. That, you know, prisoners have no easy way of communicating or verifying if this is true. So in some prisons, people started eating again, believing that the hunger strike had won. We know that papers were given to prisoners saying that if they were on hunger strike, they would be denied medication. And this is still a very important issue, which we're trying to, you know, we're desperately trying to intervene to make sure that this isn't the case. CDCR sent one paper around to prisoners in Pelican Bay, which I consider essentially a paper which the subtext of which is very Orwellian. The subtext is, we respect your right to hunger strike, we hope you're prepared to die. Essentially, the paper is listed like that, like, we're very concerned for your health and everything. You should know you're probably gonna die if you're on hunger strike. If you want to last a little longer, you can, you know, maybe purchase some vitamins or something like that. And you should tell your loved ones to appoint someone to look after you once you're not capable to speak to yourself, and you should think about how this is gonna affect them. So it's, you know, CDCR is taking the position that they're not negotiating. CDCR is trying to terrify the prisoners. It's trying to break people's resolve. It's trying to divide prisoners by telling some that the conditions have been met. And I expect that this will go on until the very last minute before they begin negotiating. They're not going to admit that they're going to begin negotiating before they're forced to. Regarding the medical issues, like I said, we're very concerned. There are several dozen doctors, nurses from throughout North America, including several here in Montreal, who signed an open letter to the CDCR, which will be delivered later this week, essentially stating that if prisoners are being denied their medicine, this is not only a violation of their constitutional rights, but this is also a crime under the California statutes. You cannot, to punish someone, deny them necessary medical care. CDCR is trying to cover themselves on this, you know, basically stating that, well, you know, doses of medication are supposed to be correlated to people who eat food, so we don't want anyone to overdose, but it's really intended to terrorize the prisoners.
Okay, and so can you tell me about the Canadian government's new and upcoming legislation concerning prisoners?
Well, already last year, the Canadian government got rid of two-for-one time, which was in the so-called Truth in Sentencing Act. And this was something that primarily was to the advantage of working class and oppressed people, especially Indigenous people. Two-for-one time meant that if you couldn't make bail, if you couldn't pay your bail, once you went to court, if you got a sentence, any time you'd spent waiting for your trial counted 2-for-1. That's now gone. And they estimate just as a result of that, they're going to have to build new prisons for all of the extra prisoners who'll be in the system. Same with getting rid of conditional release, which is a part of the crime omnibus bill. That's also supposed to disproportionately affect Indigenous people and increase the number of people in prison. But all of the crime omnibus bill is essentially designed to increase the number of prisons. That's why they're building new prisons across the country, and that's why they're also visiting supermaxes in the United States similar to Pelican Bay in order to get ideas of how to implement that kind of prison regime here in Canada.
And so just lastly, can you give me your website where listeners can get updates and find more information, and just how listeners can support the protesters and get involved?
Sure. Well, listeners can support the protesters by coming to our weekly pickets outside the U.S. consulate at 1155 St. Alexander, corner René Lévesque, every Friday from noon till 1:30. This Saturday, the 16th, we're having a demonstration at 1 p.m. starting from Dorchester Square. People can go to our website at contrelesprisons.blogspot.com. That's contrelesprisons.blogspot.com for updates. Or they can also check out the California Support Coalition's website, which is at prisonerhungerstrikesolidarity.wordpress.com. Or they can phone us at 514-570-6956.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.